Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The croissants are ready in 2 minutes.
Perfect time to start the pod. Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show, back on the air this week in spite of ferocious popular demand. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And with me as always is Tony Kerr.
Hey.
How's it going, Tony?
Good. Very good. Long time no see.
We seem to say that every single time we do one of these. It's like, that's been a while. So yeah, it has been a while.
It's actually, our recording pattern is a mess, really. Over the years, sometimes we did it like twice weekly at one point, I'm sure.
Well, we did Ashes daily for a while, didn't we? like 10 years ago.
Did we get to like the third day of the first test?
I think we got to day two of Brisbane and then we were like, no, this is too hard. But we set up a Twitter account and everything, which you still have access to, I believe. Have you been tweeting much from that?
Maybe we should revive it this winter, or next winter, rather.
Yeah, maybe not this winter. Suddenly start tweeting a load from Ashes daily this winter. It might be a bit odd.
But... I've got to start building up the audience. Yeah, it still exists. A daily podcast to accompany the World Cricket Show through the 2010-11 Ashes series.
what's the latest tweet from there?
The latest tweet is December the 4th, 2010. Peterson has been padded up for the best part of a week, it seems. Hashtag Ashes.
Good to get the hashtag in there.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, that's probably quite a prized Twitter handle.
True.
I mean, we could sell that for literally... tens of pounds.
To be fair, I think at Cricket Show is quite a prized Twitter handle as well. So
maybe that's where that'll be the big payoff.
Yeah, that's what this has all been about. Is we'll just sell the Twitter handles.
And then retire.
And then call it a day.
Sail off into the sun. Never speak again.
How's it going anyway, Tane?
Yeah, good, thanks.
You've made my dream come true. It's been a lifelong dream of mine that one day I'd turn up here to record a podcast and you'd have laid on a spread of croissants. And you did. There were croissants here. Well, there were croissants going in the oven when I arrived, which is lovely. Although we did discover that there's perhaps a reason why we haven't done this before, or a reason why we shouldn't do it more often, is that they're really not pod-friendly comestibles, are they?
Literally the worst possible thing to try and eat while you're podding.
We actually started recording and then started eating. We're like, oh, we can't do this at the same time. We have to wait. So I've been recorded 10 minutes. I'd forgotten that we were recording. And I just realized that we were 10 minutes in of just sounds of us chewing, just munching quietly.
I mean, if anyone's got a technique that they've developed to eat a croissant one-handed and spread the jam on it, I'd like to hear it. Because then maybe it would be possible. But yeah, holding this mic and... I mean, the crumbs would be everywhere.
Well, yeah, I'm getting very greasy fingers all over my mic and laptop. So that's all good. let's press on, Tony, because this is our Christmas special, actually. Christmas special of the World Cricket Show. Listeners may not have picked up on that because I didn't make any of sort of like hilarious Christmas gags in the intro. Didn't call you fat or anything like I normally do. But it is our Christmas special. Merry Christmas, Tony. You feeling Christmassy?
Very, very festive.
How many times have you watched Home Alone so far?
Zero, but, well, watched The Railway Children yesterday. I don't know if that's a Christmas film, but I haven't seen that. Well, it's not a Christmas film, is it?
No.
But I've never seen that before, so it made me feel wholesome. But hey, I was hoping to be fair. Well, there has been a fair bit of cricket to distract us, hasn't there?
There certainly has.
Although there might be a little bit less over the next few days.
That's true. Well, let's talk about that. Yeah, there is a lot of cricket going on. We've got lots to catch up on today and look ahead to, because, as you say, the winter of international cricket, or the summer, if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, of international cricket is well underway. England are in South Africa, although possibly, as you alluded to, not for much longer. But India are in Australia, West Indies are in New Zealand, Pakistan are in New Zealand too. So yeah, we'll be talking about all of that today, plus returning to one of our favourite discussion topics, which is the World Test Championship and whether it's a good idea. But let's start with England, who, as I mentioned, are in South Africa for some white ball fixtures. They're back in South Africa, actually, Tone, for the second time this year. This may shock you, but it was this year that they were in South Africa when they won that test series, and Ben Stokes won that game at Cape Town, and Mark Wood took those wickets, and Vernon Philander retired. That was all.
That's mad.
That was all this year, pre-pandemic, but it was in 2020. That's probably the thing I'll remember most from 2020. So yeah, they've completed a T20 series. They're supposed to be playing an ODI series, but that might be called off. As we're recording this, it is Sunday morning, so listeners will probably know by the time they're hearing this what the score is, but at the moment it's unclear. The first ODI has just been abandoned. It was supposed to be played on Friday. It was postponed till today, and it's now just been abandoned. On Friday, it was postponed because of the news that a couple of South Africa players had tested positive for COVID. And then this morning, it's been called off because there have been some positive test results in the England touring party. We're not sure who, but the whole touring party have gone into self-isolation because two members of the party, we're not sure whether it's players or coaching staff, have returned positive tests. So that game's been abandoned. There's supposed to be two more games to come on Monday and Wednesday, with England flying home on Thursday, but it could very well be that they'll just call it off at this point. I don't know, there's not necessarily that much to say about this, Tone, but I suppose one thing that it does shine a light on is, did we as cricket fans get a bit kind of complacent in thinking that it's just easy to pull off biosecure cricket? I mean, it just has like underlined what an amazing job the ECB and all involved in the English summer did in, you know, returning no positive cases throughout the whole summer. You know, we talked about it before any of that cricket in England, and you know, I had my doubts about whether it was even possible. I think a lot of people did. And we said, you know, what will happen if there's a positive case? It's all very straightforward when it works, but what happens if it doesn't? And I think we said at the time, we shouldn't, you know, take this for granted, even when it was working, because it's not guaranteed to continue. And this does show that we don't know what's happened, whether there have been breaches in protocol or not. At the moment, we don't know what has led to this, but it's quite a difficult thing to pull off, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, exactly. I think you're spot on. You know, the backdrop to which the nations have been trying to organise, or have been organising cricket, yeah. As you say, it's been it only underlines how impressive that was in the summer.
Yeah, it's a tricky one for us because we're recording with this news just coming out, and by the time people are hearing it, they'll probably know much more.
Bit of breaking news on the pod.
But it's disappointing news, but it does, you know, making anything biosecure is just very difficult, especially when, you know, perhaps it might be easier in New Zealand at the moment, potentially, to pull off biosecure cricket there, because COVID rates are obviously so incredibly low. You know, it's almost COVID-free. But in some, I believe there's a bit of a spike happening in Cape Town at the moment. So it's very difficult to keep the virus entirely out. But I'm sure they'll look at what's happened, whether it's people within the bubble breaching the protocol or whether it wasn't secure enough. There's talk of, you know, maybe staff have been coming and going and not sort of breaking the rules, but whether the rules were tight enough, I don't know. But it does just show it's very easy for the whole kind of thing to fall apart. But hopefully it won't be necessary for that much longer, because obviously, you know, we've had amazing news in the last couple of weeks regarding vaccines and one of the vaccines being approved for use in the UK, supposed to be starting jabbing people on Tuesday, I think, in the UK. So
jabbing people,
you know, fingers crossed, you know, next summer and next winter, none of this will be necessary. But, you know, for the time being, it is still a very fragile business.
Yeah, quite. But at least we got some, yeah, cricket away and some really eye-catching performances in that T20 series.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. So yeah, they did manage to get in a three-match T20 series, and England would be pleased about that. You know, that it's, if it does end up that they don't play these ODIs, they'll be pleased that it was that way around, at least, because, you know, the T20 is very much where their heads are at the moment in the white ball stuff, because they are obviously building towards the T20 World Cup in India next year, and there's another T20 World Cup after that, before the next 50 over World Cup. So, you know, that's what they want to concentrate on at the moment. And they won the series 3-0. They chased in all three games. The first one they won by 5 wickets with an impressive knock from Johnny Bairstow, batting down at number 4, 86 not out from 48 balls. The second one they won by 4 wickets. That was a bit closer. They were really wobbling at one point when chasing 146 when they were 55 for 3 and then 83 for 4. But David Milan with 55 from 40 balls and Owen Morgan 26 not out got them over the line in the end. And then the third game was very comfortable despite South Africa posting a much more challenging target. They made 191 for 3 with a great partnership from Faf du Plessis and Rassie van der Dusen. He made 74 not out from just 32 balls. But England in their chase just made it look very easy despite the early loss of Jason Roy. Milan and Joss Butler with an extraordinary partnership, a world record partnership, I believe, for the second wicket, got England to the target with 9 wickets and more than 2 overs to spare. Butler 67 not out from 46 balls and Milan agonisingly 99 not out from 47 balls. So yeah, 3-0, a 3-0 whitewash. So what did you make of it, Tone? What was your verdict on these the Tony Kerr verdict on these three games?
What's been waiting for?
Was it, you know, in the end, were England just a bit too good? Is that
yeah,
a story?
I think you can say that. Yeah, I mean, the juggernaut kind of rolls on a bit, doesn't it? You just wouldn't want to bowl at them. That's my key takeaway.
You wouldn't.
I really wouldn't.
No.
And you know, so obviously, it's not a kind of, this is not a classic South Africa side, is it? And I don't know. You know, they'd be outside bets for the World Cup next year rather than, you know, in and amongst the favourites. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the partnership between, you know, Butler and Milan in that final T20, when you got two players producing that, and you know the other players that are sitting in the, you know, around watching it, you know, had they got through those two, they still would have lost. Yeah, I mean, it's shaping up very nicely for England.
Yeah, they still had Bairstow, Stokes, Morgan to come, just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. We
said it, but it's an embarrassment of riches in the most literal sense.
It's an embarrassment.
it is embarrassing.
Absolute embarrassment of riches. Well, yeah, when you know you've got the likes of Sam Billings sitting on the bench, who obviously was, you know, fantastic in England in the summer. I mean, it is worth saying that they could easily have lost one, if not both, of the first two games. I mean, certainly in the second game, they were really wobbling and both went to last over finishes. But yeah, in the end, they've won this series with a bit to spare. And I think there's just there's a bit of a gulf in class between these two teams. But as you say, it's not a vintage South Africa side. We talked about this plenty at the beginning of the year on England's first tour, about their difficulties at the moment, the fact they're very much in transition. But there are some promising signs in terms of the players coming through. But yeah, they were a long way short in the end. And England, with this victory, moved to the top of the T20 rankings. Does that seem right to you? You know, are they the best T20 team in the world at the moment? Are they favourites for the World Cup next year?
Well, there's probably not much to separate them in India, I think. The fact that it's in India as well, yeah, maybe tips it towards India slightly. And clearly, again, the kind of wealth of talent that they have at their disposal, you know, yeah, they won't be far off. It will probably be India and England, I think. I'm not going out too far on a limb to say that. I mean, England have now won, they've only lost one series in 8. They've won 7 of the last 8 series, T20 series. The last series they lost was against India a couple of years ago. It's going to be bloody exciting.
That was when Kuldeep Yadav kind of burst onto the scene, wasn't it? I suppose that would be the thing, you know, just at this juncture, the thing why you might put India slightly ahead of them as you say, because it's in India. And not only will that suit India, but also some of the England batsmen. There are some incredibly good players of spin in there, but somebody like Jason Roy, who really struggled against George Linder in this series. You know, and Roy, we both thought, was England's man of the tournament in the 50-over World Cup last year. You know, he might find life more difficult in India than he would in another part of the world. Yeah, it's not necessarily their ideal.
And that said, you know, it's probably a different situation to a few years ago. You know, most of these players have got significant IPL experience.
This is true, yeah.
Okay, albeit this year wasn't, you know, obviously played in India, but
similar conditions.
Yeah. So in that sense, yeah, it's not probably as alien as it, you know, as it might have been. They'll probably be quite comfortable in the setup and, you know, in those cities, in those grounds. Mm. But yeah,
it does. It's not like it's not like it was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. We were like, well, they've got, well, obviously you'd have thought they had no chance anyway, but you'd have said they've got no, because of the, you know, because of what they were like as a team then. But you'd say like, well, England have got no chance of winning a tournament in India, but it's just, it probably tilts the scales a little bit towards India, whereas if, to make India slight favourites ahead of them, whereas if it was going to be in England, then it would be very much in England's favour. But I mean, without doubt, the man of the series was David Milan, who obviously finished with that 99 not out. And he went into it as the number one T20 batsman in the world. And some people may have thought that that was a fluke or a kind of false position. And it is surprising, given that less than a year ago, he wasn't first choice for England. But it's probably fair to say that in these few games, he showed, well, not only that it's justified that he is first choice for England, but that it's even justified that he's number one in the rankings.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is quite wild because it, you know, without being too, you know, his name, just that, you know, he's not a name, you know, it's not.
Well, he's becoming a name.
He is becoming a name bloody quickly. And what, you know, he's the highest rated T20 batsman ever, isn't he now?
So, is that right? I didn't realize that.
This is, 915 points. As Adam Collins pointed out on Twitter, the highest rated test batsman ever, Bradman, ODI batsman, Viv Richards, right. T20 batsman, David Milan. It's phenomenal.
I mean, yeah, that is obviously a little bit silly. Well, silly is the wrong word, but you know, it's surprising, to put it mildly. But then the way he played in these games, so he averaged 89 across the series, and that 99 not out was, I think, as good an innings as you will see in T20 cricket, just kind of like oozing quality, yeah. Wasn't he? I hate the word oozing. But yeah, just like totally in command, you know, just the kind of complete assurance that he was going to get the job done. And I really love watching him bat.
Yeah,
well.
He's beautiful to watch.
Really good player to watch. So, you know.
The range of hitting, the timing, some classic strokes in there and some sort of big golf swings down the ground. But and you sort of contrast him to Butler, who occasionally, you know, it's almost brute force with Butler. I know he's got all the tricks as well and, you know, and the flicks and everything. But some of the shots that Butler plays, he just looks like he's kind of strong-arming it over the boundary. Whereas, Milan was just, the rhythm of his batting was, as you say, just very, very enjoyable to watch.
It is remarkable because, you know, in that 2019 50 over World Cup win, you look at that England batting lineup, you know, we looked at that England batting lineup and said, well, this is obviously the best batting lineup that England have ever had. It's arguably one of the best batting lineups that's ever been in white ball cricket. I know this is a different format, but it's still, you know, it's still the case that that is as good a batting lineup as any team has ever had, really. And then Milan has forced his way into it and become the key player in it. You know, that it does go to show just how good he's been. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is quite, it's wild. And, you know, when you think, you know, it's probably, T20 is the premier format in world cricket at the moment in terms of just eyes and razzmatazz and box office money. And you think of the great players there are in around the world, as you say, not just in England. And there he is, as the highest rated player in the relatively short history of T20 cricket. Yeah, it's very cool.
Sorry, I'm just chuckling because I've just realised I'm drinking water from this bottle. It's got like a, how do you describe that?
Well, it's like a sports squirt, I don't know, squirt cap, is that?
Yeah, so when I drink from it, it just sounds a bit like I'm kissing someone. it just sounds like whenever you make a good point, I just give you a quick smooch.
Yeah, just going.
Peck on the cheek. Just a quick peck on the cheek just to just to let you know that you're really doing a good job there. Well, so one of the interesting things, so as I say, not only is Milan, he's forced his way into the team and he's shaken up that incredibly settled and incredibly successful batting lineup and forced the batting orders to change. So Owen Morgan said before the series that one of the key things they have to sort out in the next 12 months before that World Cup is the batting order. So yeah, they've got world-class batsmen everywhere you look, but potentially, you know, the challenges or what could yet be their undoing is, can you get them in the right order? Can you find an order that suits them all best, kind of optimizes their performance? So are you happy, Tone, with what they've landed on at the moment? We've got, you know, Milan in at three, so Roy and Butler at the top, Bairstow at four, then Stokes at five and Morgan at six. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm not too unhappy.
Ed Smith is breathing a sigh of relief to hear that.
It's hard to know what order you'd deploy those batsmen in, because there's a sort of strong case for any of them to open. I don't know.
Do you think it matters that much?
Well, I don't. I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, I was talking to someone about it last night, saying, you know,
you're talking to someone else about cricket.
Yeah, I know. I was like, thank God, someone intelligent to bounce some ideas off.
Yeah, go on.
But you know, sort of talking about the idea of like a finisher in T20. You know, but in a way, you've just got to. It's got to be like balls to the wall from ball one, haven't you? Effectively, and keep going. I'm not really too bothered about what order they play them in.
Yeah, that's kind of, I suppose, that's the decision you've got to make, isn't it? Particularly with Joss Butler, do you want him to be in at five or six as the finisher? Or do you think that, as you say, the idea of a finisher isn't quite as relevant anymore? Mm. And maybe you want, if Butler is arguably the best of the lot, apart from maybe Milan, do you want him to be batting for as long as possible? And this is what has been the disruptive factor, is that they've, you know, what was so settled with Roy and Bairstow and then Morgan, Butler, Stokes in the middle order, they've moved Butler to the top, and that has kind of, and then Milan at three has kind of thrown up all these questions. I think they should possibly stick with or go back to Roy and Bairstow, just because it was such a successful partnership. Butler does have such a successful, you know, proven record as a finisher, as someone a bit lower down. I don't know that you necessarily need to change that, or are you getting that much benefit from changing that? But then, you know, Best obviously did really well at four in this series. As you say, maybe it doesn't matter. Arguably, like, Butler and Best are interchangeable. It might depend on the day, who's in form, and probably whatever they come up with will be fine.
Yeah.
But what you don't want is to have any doubt, you know, for any of them to be feeling any doubt about what their role is or what they're supposed to be doing. As long as they know what it is and they've all got the confidence to go out and execute, then I think probably whatever they come up with.
Their role is just to go in and tee off, is it?
Well, possibly, yeah. I suppose so. But they still need to know, even if it's just...
Who's padding up?
Who's padding up, yeah. Do they need to try and find their box yet or not?
Yeah. What time do they need?
Just scrabbling through their kit bag, there's old mouldy sandwiches and Sabutio.
You could make a strong case for any one of those six being England's best batsmen, and you want those, you want your best players to have the opportunity to face the most balls. Mm. Clearly, you know, Milan is probably walking around the dressing room now, you know, cock a hoop,
strutting around.
But as you say, you know, but yeah, you know, Butler is an astonishing batsman, but you know, an informed Bairstow,
yeah,
is as good as anyone. Yeah, Owen Morgan is probably like the best. batsman in the world. I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's
well,
exciting.
Yeah. And then Roy is the one that we've always thought.
Stokes is England's best batsman.
True. I mean, Morgan is the one that I think at six, do we really want Morgan at six? That seems too low, because he is probably the best. But then as you say, like, whoever's at six, you'd probably say that about. I mean, Bairstow was absolutely phenomenal, I thought, in that first game. And, you know, that's a really good sign that he came in at four and was able to do that. He didn't feel any of that doubt. So yeah, I think, you know, it's probably interchangeable. Bairstow is brilliant to watch when he bats like that. And he may be maybe the best of the bunch. But you said you didn't really see much of that first game, but it's brutal hitting, but in a really kind of controlled way.
Yeah, like, I've caught up with the highlights. It's quite funny actually watching the highlights. Just with Mark Nicholas on commentary.
Yeah.
His commentary style just doesn't really suit 10-minute highlight edits, because he doesn't really say it. He just goes, wow, like, oh, and then it's like onto the next highlight.
Yeah.
Or he just starts laughing. It's just
dreamy.
Like,
dreamy stroke. Dreamy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the way he kind of like checks the shot and just holds it. And it flies out the ground for six. It is, as I say, it's kind of like controlled brutality. I mean, which, as you know, is the title of my upcoming autobiography. Sorry, go on.
There was talk ahead of the series, you know, people saying that Root's sniffing around, you know, he still wants, you know, part of it. I mean,
I don't see
how
a place
you get
for
him.
Yeah,
it's almost impossible. I mean, the only thing potentially, I guess, for heading to India is a second spin option, which England don't really have, or that certainly isn't really much room for. Mm.
What, so you think Root could have a role there? I mean, if he's up for it, then he's... I would definitely...
I think he might be up for it,
yeah. And I would definitely have him in the squad. But no, you know, because Ed Smith has said, well, if he's not going to play, then we won't have him in the squad.
Yeah.
Like, to give him a break, and he doesn't have to be kind of endlessly, you know, he doesn't have to be touring, on tour for that long. He may as well just go home and be with his family and, you know, have a break and refresh and be ready for the next test or ODI assignment. But if he's happy to be in the squad and just carrying the drinks, then I think, you know, he's a huge asset to
good
have
as anyone to do that.
On the bench. But he doesn't get in the first choice team at the moment, I don't think. We'll move on to Australia in a sec. But just looking at the bowling, one question I wanted to ask, how do you, because I don't think I've ever asked you this, Tane, how do you feel about Tom Curran? He got clattered at times in this series. Would he be in your first choice England team? Because he's keeping Mark Wood out of the side at the moment.
I think he's got a way to go, hasn't he? He's got a little bit to prove for sure. And it's tough because, yeah, in a team with Archer and you know, and Rashid, he's always going to be overshadowed somewhat. Fairly indifferent at the moment. Ambivalent, is that the right word? Mm. Or indifferent? No, I don't know.
Indifferent implies you don't care.
Yeah, yeah, true. You've got to give him a bit more time. What do you think?
Well, he's been around.
He's been around for a little while.
He's
played a few matches, but
I suppose, like, I just don't necessarily rate him, or I don't quite understand why he's in the team ahead of someone like Mark Wood or even David Willey, who offers something a bit different. I think that's the thing, is that it makes the attack more one-dimensional when Curran plays. And but then I, you know, I've said that before. Like I've texted my brother to say, what is Curran doing in the team, you know, as he runs into bowl? And then he's really, you know, I did that in the series against Australia and he was really good. But I just do think there are better options. So I'm a bit surprised that they're placing so much faith in him. But his brother's development as a T20 player, I think, is a really useful thing for England, because he, in Test cricket, Sam Curran can look a little bit one-dimensional. Like, you think, well, if the ball doesn't swing, then he's got problems. But I think in T20, he obviously had a good IPL. He is developing quite an impressive array of, you know, inventory of cutters and slower balls and things like that. So that, I think, could be really important for England, because he is a proper batsman. And as you say, England not sure who their second spinner would be. That's because of, you know, Moeen Ali has lost his way, although he's still in the squad. But Moeen was really, I think, critical in terms of balancing the team. Someone who could, you know, genuine batsman who could bat at seven and be a frontline bowler. And without Moeen, when Tom Curran was batting at seven in the summer, that suddenly that tail looked much weaker. But with Sam Curran, with his brother at seven, that, you know, I'm much happier about that. So I think that's an important thing for England. Do you want to talk, before we move on, do you want to talk about these coded signals from the balcony, or do you think it's a non-story?
A little bit, we could, yeah.
Do you want to remind the listeners what's happened with this?
Basically these kind of coded messages appeared on the balcony, the team analyst flipping over clipboards with letters and numbers on, who knows what they mean or, you know, what they're trying to suggest. But it caused a bit of consternation. And it, unsurprisingly, Michael Vaughan came out
swinging.
As other people said, you know, it's just a kind of, you know, it is what it is. Like, messages have always been kind of transmitted from the dressing room to the middle. But yeah, it led a few people to question that, you know, what was it within the spirit of the game? I mean, it doesn't make me too angry.
What was it? So it was, when you say coded signals, it was things like a number and it was basically a number and
like
a letter,
a couple
wasn't
of
it?
Clipboards where he'd sort of pin like 4E or something, or like C1, I think.
So presumably, like, that's different strategies or different tactics, plans that he's saying, you know, execute this now. Or as England have said, it's not saying do this, it's saying this is
sort of updated info,
this
live
is a
info.
Recommendation from the analyst.
I mean, I think any suggestion that it's not within the spirit of the game, I think, is a bit ludicrous. And you know, some people got quite hot under the collar about it and sort of suggested, you know, as England have often been the ones to, you know, the valiant defenders of the spirit of the game. And so it's sort of a bit rich for them to be doing this. But I don't really get the issue. When you hear the description of what they're trying to do, it does sound quite joyless and like sucks some of the fun out.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the analyst is called.
Nathan Lehman.
Yeah.
Lehman, I think.
Nathan.
Big Nate.
Nathan. you know, their description of what they were doing, he said, you know, effectively, obviously, they've got strategies, they've kind of crunched the numbers ahead of the game, but during the match, they're kind of running simulations and projections and stuff, and they're just update, and it just does sound a bit...
Well, they described it in the statement, they described it as a live informational resource to draw on, and I think, you know, whatever you think about whether or not this is against the spirit of the game, they possibly don't help their case with that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
But... you know, as a statement, but and as you say, it's perhaps a bit joyless, which is something we've complained about before with stuff like WinViz. But clearly, they certainly haven't broken any rules. You know, they explicitly cleared it with the match referee beforehand, so it's hard to make a case against them in that sense. It does feel a bit weird. I think it's a bit of a weird thing to do. And Mark Wood in press said, you know, was asked about it, and he kind of dismissed it and said, oh, you know, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter. It's, I'm sure Owen Morgan's got better things to do. He won't take too much notice of it. In which case, like, well, why do it then?
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why you're doing it if Owen Morgan's not going to take any notice of it. So, but I don't think it is against the spirit of the game because, as you say, messages are passed back and forth from the dressing room all the time. Whenever, you know, whenever drinks come on or the subfielder, I'm sure that a message goes out. And but then it made me think a bit about how some sport, like different sports, just have a very different attitude to this stuff. Like in tennis, it's just a massive no coaching. This is obviously what happened with Serena Williams in the 2018 US Open final, where that row started because she was given a code violation because her coach Patrick Mouratoglou was spotted kind of giving her a signal, like coaching, and you just absolutely can't do that. Whereas in football, obviously the manager's just on the touchline yelling instructions all the time. In cricket, it's maybe it's a little bit in between. It's not something I'd ever really given that much thought to, but I don't really see how it can be against the spirit for the coaching staff to be sharing information. But you know, when they go in for a break in test cricket, when they go off for tea or whatever, obviously they're discussing things. I just don't really see
a problem. I agree.
It's weird, but it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to be convinced about all this number crunching that goes on in the background. Clearly there is value to a certain extent. I'm slightly more lean towards the idea that you've just got to kind of bat and bowl better and take your catches. Yeah. Like at some point, like
there'll be people listening to that who think
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely moronic. But I think for me, it's like, it's in between, you know. I think clearly all that data and science and, you know, algorithms have made a difference, have, you know, helped create this kind of improvement. But I think you can just take it way too far and get too obsessed with it. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, you know, talked about obviously England going from, you know, where they were as a white ball team in the kind of mid-noughties, which was, you know, appalling and pathetic, to now being like the most destructive white ball batting lineup in the world. Like, how much of that has been down to the kind of number crunching in the background, or, you know, is it just a sort of mentality shift that's taken place? I don't know.
Or is it a golden generation? I don't think that's quite true, but it, because clearly there's a lot of other very good batsmen, white ball batsmen around, but that might be part of it too, that they are just blessed with some extremely good players at the moment. In 5 years' time, they might not be quite as good as this with a raft of new batsmen. It's important, it's clearly useful, but I don't like the idea of anyone like relying on it too much. But that's kind of what they were saying. It's like, it's just true for Owen Morgan's information. It doesn't mean that he has to act on it.
When I saw it, it did make me think of that Crystal Mayes clip. The guy who was it, like, it's like 4D.
It's like, just U3.
It's like Owen Morgan looking at it, be like, like C1. What does that mean? Just be like,
U3. Press U3. I'm coming out. I'm coming out. There's 2 minutes left. U3.
Thank you. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
All right, well, let's move on, Tone, to Australia, because India are there for their first internationals post-pandemic. I suppose not post-pandemic, post-beginning of pandemic. We've had some ODIs, which Australia won relatively comfortably. 2-1, only losing the dead rubber. They racked up some huge totals in the first two games. In Sydney, with Steve Smith scoring hundreds in both. There are some T20s happening at the moment. India won the first one, didn't they? Am I right in saying that?
Bit of controversy in that one as well.
Go on.
Yeah, India won that one by 11 runs. But yeah, Jadeja... Well, India batted first. Yeah, Jadeja made 44, 23 balls. I think he pulled up, he sort of pulled a hamstring at some stage in the innings and then subsequently top-edged one into his helmet and was substituted at halftime at the break, a concussion substitute. But some hot heads after this one because, India replaced him with Chahal as a like-for-like substitute and... Yeah, the Australians didn't see it as like for like. And then, yeah, he came in. Charles came in and what did he take? Took 3 for 25, man of the match.
It's obviously a big debate in football at the moment about concussion substitutes, but maybe, you know, obviously it's essential, but it is an interesting thing in cricket where you do have such different roles. And if it is an all-rounder who goes off halfway through the game when there's only, you know, one of the two disciplines to come, then it...
Yeah, and you bring in an out and out bowler.
Yeah, it does get a bit tricky.
I think possibly, you know, yeah, in the spirit of the rule, is it determining a like for like? Then it wasn't. They didn't play by the rules.
No, but then is there a like for like in the squad if it's an all rounder?
Yeah, I mean clearly as well. Like if the shoe was on the other foot, Australia wouldn't have replaced. Yeah, they wouldn't exactly have taken out. Then all round and replace them with a batsman, would they, for the second innings? But I don't know. It's
well, they've just won the second T20 as well, India. They needed 14 off the last over. This is more breaking news on the World Cricket Show. It's literally just happened. They needed 14 off the last over, and Hardik Pandya has hit 2 sixes to win the game and the series with 2 balls to spare. So, yeah, as you said earlier, India's T20 team looking pretty good with a year to go till the World Cup. But the thing, obviously the thing that everyone's most looking forward to is the Test series, which starts on the 17th of December. There's 4 tests. How much are you looking forward to it? Key question, how much are you looking forward to the Boxing Day Test this year?
Yeah, big.
That is massive, isn't it? Like this year, more than any other year, that feels like something to really enjoy.
100%. Yeah, it's going to be a very, very interesting series. Yeah, arguably it's the sort of first, as you say, since the pandemic, it's the first kind of really mouth-watering clash we've had, I think. Buzzing.
True, although I don't want to be negative about it, but I, not very long ago, I would have been pumped for this series in a way that I would have thought this would have been like, I thought it would be like an absolutely kind of titanic concert, like one of the sort of era-defining series between probably the best team of this era, India, and then Australia not that far behind them and at home. I mean, obviously 2 years ago India won in Australia and that was their first ever Test series in Australia, but that was an Australia team in transition and they didn't have Steve Smith and David Warner, whereas they've obviously improved a lot in the intervening 24 months. So yeah, it was looking like this could be a contest between two very good teams at the top of their game, and I really would have found it difficult to call. And that could still be the case, but just two things have like slightly rained on my chips or whatever. But firstly, I think COVID has changed things a bit. I just don't know if anything is going to quite have the impact that it normally would. Perhaps that's...
I think that's fair.
I don't know, because obviously, as we talked about, I really, really enjoyed the cricket in England in the summer. But just somehow, I don't know, cricket in the pandemic just doesn't... Any sport in the pandemic just feels slightly different, doesn't it? Just a little bit of the edge is gone.
Hopefully we sort of turned the corner and can start to enjoy those things in a more kind of usual way now. That's just not the case everywhere. It's really difficult.
Yeah, I'm not sort of expressing myself very well, because I think it's not that I'll enjoy it any less, but it just perhaps feels a little bit less significant, I think is the point. Like, it feels more like something that is there to kind of lift our spirits and distract us rather than something that like really means a lot. But then maybe once it gets going and if we have close games and stuff, maybe I'll feel differently. And secondly, the other thing is that Virat Kohli is going to miss three of the four games. So he's playing the first test, but missing 2, 3, and 4 because he's going back to India on paternity leave, which is, you know, goes without saying, the right thing to do, but is clearly a bit of a setback for India, and perhaps just means, you know, while it's still an incredibly good team, that's you know, undoubtedly he's their best player, and so, you know, they've still got Pujara, they've still got KL Rahul, it's still a strong batting lineup, and then, you know, the thing that has made the difference and turned India into the best team in the world in the last few years is that their bowling attack is one of the best in the world, and so that's still the case, you know, still Bumrah and Shami and Kuldeep Yadav and Ashwin and all those guys, so it doesn't completely destroy their hopes, but it just does mean it's not quite as formidable a team. It could, you know, it could still very much be that titanic battle I might have imagined, but whereas 2 years ago Australia weren't quite at their best, now you'd say India aren't quite at their best, so we've just, there's just been a kind of ships passing in the night thing where we just haven't quite had those two teams at their absolute best for either test series, which I think is just a little bit of a shame.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, that little controversy in the T20 series, you know, will inject a little bit of extra heat in there. You know, just you know, get the blood pumping a bit.
I think it'll still be a really good series. Yeah. Actually, I think India have definitely still got a good chance for sure. That bowling attack does mean they're always going to be in the game, aren't they? So, but they are going to be, you know, they're going to need Pujara to have the kind of series that he had in Australia 2 years ago.
We don't like to just frame everything, you know, in a sort of as part of Ashes build-up, but...
Right, hang on, let me open up the Ashes Daily Twitter account. I'll just... What are you going to say? I'll tweet it out.
But, you know, it'll be an interesting and slightly frightening, I think, the way Australia are developing towards next winter. Mm. It could be pretty tough for England.
What makes you say that?
Well, you know...
Specifically. Give me some specifics.
The batting lineup is only sort of seemingly getting stronger. Obviously, you know, Smith is still at the top of his game. Labuschagne, you know, is kind of really emerged as a top level player.
Top level.
Mm. You know, obviously, David Warner, when he gets going, is as good as there is in his position. They've got a couple of young players who are starting to come through. I mean, Pekowski has been on the radar, isn't he, for a few years and you know, has had troubles, mental health issues, which have kind of prevented him kind of nailing down a spot. But it seems like he's starting to come into some sort of rhythm and kind of making a play for things. So, yeah,
I don't know. Prodigious talent.
Yeah,
isn't he?
And, you know, he's been racking up the runs recently. Mm. Yeah, another year. Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, I guess they won't want to be putting too much pressure on him. And nor will there be much pressure when you've got those other batsmen around. Mm. But yeah, Australia could have a pretty tasty batting lineup by this time next year. And then you marry that with the fast bowling options they've got.
It's a good team, isn't it?
It's going to be... Yeah.
Well, especially in Australian conditions. I do think Australia are, you know, are clear favourites for this series, especially because India are without Kohli. But it still could be really good. And actually, the more we talk about it, the more excited I am. I am really looking forward to it because I think it could be really close. But I think Australia will be much more confident this time than they were 2 years ago, and rightly so. And will, you know, perhaps be out for well, to prove a point maybe, and now they've got Smith and Warner back and they'll feel more like this is the real us. Justin Lang has, you know, been getting them all to watch A Star Is Born just to get them really pumped up, just banging out The Shallows, as you know, in the dressing room before they go out there.
Emotional.
I'm sure they'll be up for it. All right, well, moving on, because we need to rattle through a couple of things. West Indies are in New Zealand and for a two test series, and that first test has just finished, and New Zealand won it pretty comfortably in the end. They batted first and racked up 519 for 7, declared with Tom Latham making 86 and Kane Williamson a career high score of 251. A pretty astonishing innings from the New Zealand captain. And although West Indies made a solid start in their reply, they were no wickets down at the end of day two, and you know, perhaps thinking they might be able to bat long and force a draw. But when I woke up after the third day, I was like, oh, because they'd lost 15 wickets to be bowled out for 138, then they were five down. And that has been wrapped up on the fourth morning. West Indies 247 all out. Again, wickets shared around with 4 for Southee in the first innings and 4 for Wagner in the second innings. So New Zealand won by an innings and 134 runs. I thought this would be quite an entertaining test series, Tony. It may yet be. The second game might be much closer. But, you know, I think these are two good teams. But there's a bit of a gap between them. And, I do think New Zealand are one of the very best teams in the world at the moment. And in home conditions, they're actually imperiously good, aren't they? They beat India 2-0 earlier this year. They haven't even lost a test match at home for 3.5 years, which was the last time they lost a series when South Africa won 1-0. And that was a very, very good South Africa team back then. Yeah, they're extremely tough to beat at home. And I'm not sure West Indies have quite got the tools, quite got the ammo to do it. But yeah, it's a match defined, you would say, by that Williamson innings. Here's a question for you. How good is Kane Williamson?
Yeah, he's all right, isn't he? I mean, yeah, the photos of the pitch were catching some eyes, weren't they?
Before the start of the game.
I mean, you could barely discern it from the outfield.
It was that green. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you look at, the way everyone else got on around Williamson, you obviously lay them... put on a decent partnership with Williamson before he went, but then no one else really stuck around. It's very impressive. So he was on, he didn't have a great series, did he, against India? He'd made one score of note. Likewise, against Australia at the end of last season. So it's obviously New Zealand's first Test match for a little while. Mm. He certainly hadn't been pulling up trees, in those previous two series, but. I mean, yeah, there's no doubting his class, is there?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. This is perhaps something to return to because it might be a long conversation. But if you had to pick one batsman, if you were picking blind for a cricket match that was going to start tomorrow, and you didn't know what format it was going to be, and you could pick one batsman from anywhere in the world, I was thinking it might be Williamson. If you didn't know if it was going to be a Test, an ODI, or a T20,
interesting.
Possibly Kohli. I mean, obviously Smith maybe
he's just
not
banged two centuries
in ODIs, but maybe in T20 not quite as
Ben Stokes.
Devastating. Yeah, not a bad shout.
And he could chuck the ball around as well. Mm.
I don't know. It's something we can come back to. But Williamson is just—he's just class, isn't he? Just classy. Oozes class, doesn't he?
Oozing.
He's just absolutely oozing with class. Yeah, tough outing for West Indies. I mean, on paper they've got a bowling attack that should do well in New Zealand. You know, someone like Jason Holder, you'd think is just kind of factory made for those conditions, isn't he? And as you say, it was one of the greenest pitches you'll ever see. So in a way, maybe slightly surprising that they didn't make more breakthroughs on day one. But yeah, Latham is a quality player and he played a good innings. And then, as you say, the rest of the batting lineup didn't stick around in quite the same way. It was just a world-class innings from a world-class player. And for West Indies, you know, the batting continues to be there. Achilles heel, doesn't it? And they've left out Shea Hope now, which I think makes sense given his wretched form, but it's not a good sign, is it? Because, you know, he's clearly one of the brightest talents in the Caribbean. So if he's struggling so much that he can't make the touring party, then it's probably not a good thing. And, you know, anywhere they play, the batting is a bit of an issue. But in New Zealand against Bolt, Wagner, Southee and now Carl Jameson as well, it's just big problems, isn't it? So they need their bowlers to be like 10 out of 10 every game, every innings. There's just a lot of pressure on them. And if they're only 8 out of 10 against someone like Williamson, it's not going to be enough.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you look at the batting, like Craig Brathwaite scored big runs in the tour match in the warm-up ahead of it and then failed twice, particularly when you're faced with trying to dig out after shipping 519 in the first innings. You need, like, Brathwaite, you need someone like him if you're West Indies to dig in and offer some resistance.
Well, he's a bit of a frustrating player in some ways because he's got more talent than he's delivering on at the moment. But it's always a bit tricky, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, I suppose this is the job, isn't it? But they've been in the field for 145 overs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not digging them out too much. I think you're right. And
New Zealand, of course, a very, very good bowling attack.
Yeah, cricket is difficult when one team piles on the runs in the first innings, and then you've got to try and, mentally, it's a mental mountain to climb, isn't it, after that?
Cricket is difficult. I think we can just stop it there.
I mean, the thought of spending 140 overs in the field is just like, it's bad enough 16 overs. Mm. Well, it's like when you turn up to play for, in Guernsey Evening League 3, it's annoying when it goes from 16 overs to 20 overs. You're like, oh, we playing 20 tonight. It's like, oh, come on.
Or they say like, yeah, I know it's been a little bit of rain earlier, so we're reducing it down to 14. You're like, yes. Maybe that just suggests that we don't enjoy playing cricket as much as we should.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, one more test to come in that series. It's not on TV in the UK, which is a bit annoying. But it is on YouTube. There's good highlights on YouTube. So I recommend that. And actually, given my current life circumstances, it's not as if I'd be staying up all night to watch it anyway. I wouldn't even make the 10 o'clock start. So YouTube highlights is probably the thing that suits me anyway. One more thing to discuss then, Tony. You wanted to talk about the World Test Championship back up for discussion. I mean, you'll note that we haven't mentioned it at all in discussing any of the results or upcoming test series. It's not something that we've, considered important enough to mention until now. So perhaps that gives us, that kind of, that's a spoiler for what we might discuss now. But it's back up for discussion, this, after Greg Barclay, who is the newly elected chair of the ICC, questioned whether it should or would continue beyond the first final, which is scheduled for next June. So his quote was, I'm just not quite sure it's entirely fit for purpose and perhaps has achieved what we might have hoped it would. It's kind of up for grabs.
Oh, really strongly, yeah.
And we'll have a look at it. Sorry, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of up for grabs and we'll have a look at it. It's just absolutely hectic. That's what I need to do to kind of get me into the... And my new favourite word in New Zealand accent is magnetic. Oh, it's just absolutely magnetic. Anyway, that's the quote. He's not sure it's entirely fit for purpose, kind of implying that it might be for the scrap heap after next summer. What do you reckon, Tim? What do you make of the World Test Championship at this point? I don't even know what
I'm looking at the table is baffling. I think we've discussed it. We've sort of mentioned this before. I mean, it's obviously not, the pandemic hasn't helped, has it? It's not, I'm sure at the sort of top of everyone's list of worries when the devastating virus emerged. Like, no. What will this mean for the World Test Championship? Mm. But I mean, it certainly hasn't helped. I don't know. It's a bit clearly that they've made some adjustments to how things will run, and God knows whether the final will have any meaning at all, or quite how it'll work. But I think they've got to let it, at least this first one, play out. Have they not? Before,
well, yeah, and they're going to,
yeah.
But do you mean let it play out and then make a decision?
Yeah, I think so. Because it might be that when the final gets played, it might be like an absolutely awesome event and something everyone's kind of buzzing for, and then you think, well, hang on, that was brilliant. We need to, maybe finesse the how it all works or whatever. But we want to recreate this amazing final or final series. Is it a one-off final?
I believe it's just a one-off test. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. You look at the table. It's who knows. Everyone's played different numbers of matches. There's columns, points, PCT, RPW.
Is the PCT the percentage? Because they have changed it, is what I'm saying. Because of the pandemic, they decided to change it from a points per game format to just a win percentage, which actually changed who was at the top of the table. Australia.
Yes, Australia are top now.
Leapfrogged India, although, you know, hasn't changed the fact that it's looking like it'll be those two teams that contest the final. Yeah, I mean, this will shock you, Tony, but I haven't really changed my mind.
Yeah.
I had big reservations about it ever since it was first mooted. All the things that I was worried about, I think, are coming to pass. Like, I wouldn't be too critical of them for, you know, the people who've devised and implemented it, because I think it's a nice idea and it's trying to tackle a problem which does exist, which is the kind of lack of context in Test cricket, and particularly for smaller or the non-big three nations who don't have those kind of marquee series like the Ashes or Australia, India to look forward to. But it just doesn't quite work for me. And there are just some sort of like inherent problems in any idea like this, because, you know, you can't really do it in less than 2 years, which is what they've got at the moment. But 2 years for me is just too long a time to kind of sustain interest in a tournament like this. And then the other thing is that it can be counterproductive. It can actually have the opposite effect from what they're trying to achieve, which is that it can make series between teams who have no prospect of qualifying for the final actually less significant than they would otherwise be. Instead of West Indies v Sri Lanka having some kind of context of it, so you're sort of, if they can't qualify for the final a year into the tournament, are you kind of saying to them, well, actually this series doesn't matter in a way that you weren't before? So I think the problem for me is it's a half measure. Like, if you're if you're serious about it, if you're serious about having a Test Championship and, you know, and doing all this to create a kind of structure of context for Test cricket, you've got to do it properly and introduce two or more divisions and have promotion and relegation to make every series have some meaning and jeopardy. But they're never going to do that, because obviously it's possible that England and Australia, or Australia and India, or England and India will be in different divisions, and you won't have those kind of money-making series for a couple of years, or a year. So it just isn't something they're going to do. But that means for me that you can't really do anything of this nature. You've got to look at other ways of adding context. So just, for me, it's about just raising the quality of long-form cricket around the world, like putting some money into Red Bull domestic tournaments and things to incentivize players to play more of it and improve their skills. Because I think when Test cricket, and to be fair, there's been a lot of very good Test cricket in the last few years, but when Test cricket is good, people care about it. When it's, you know, when it's a good contest between bat and ball and it's exciting, people aren't too worried about the fact that it doesn't have a kind of broader context. It's only when it's flat pitches and boring one-sided games that people go, well, what's the point of any of this? Does that make
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I agree with everything you just said.
Brilliant.
I think they kind of had to do it in a way. The fact that people were, there were, you know, there was a lot of people kind of calling for something like that. Yeah, they had to give it a go. And yeah, I don't think it should be no shame if it's failed. It's, you know, it answers a few questions potentially, even if the answer is that didn't work, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they've tried. They're to be applauded for trying, I think.
I mean, there's so many challenges and moving parts, as you say, in terms of like trying to improve Test cricket as a whole. You know, that they should be trying to find a way as well to get Ireland and Afghanistan on the board, which they're obviously really struggling with. And, you know, Ireland have been kind of very unlucky and also slightly screwed over by their entry into Test cricket. But, you know, when you look at the teams on the board in Test cricket, there are series that you look at and think, oh, I'm not really that excited about, but that kind of shouldn't be the case. You know, Zimbabwe obviously is a bit of a unique example, but every other side in there should and could be a top of the table Test team. Clearly there are massive advantages, you know, or clearly countries like the big three have their inbuilt advantages, but yeah, we should be getting excited about series, England series, and against any other nation, not just an Ashes. And likewise, you know, they've got to try and find a way for those countries to be excited about facing, you know, about just climbing up their rankings board. I think actually getting to number one is probably as good an achievement, or that should feel like a Test Championship victory in its own right.
Yeah. And I know, well, people, listeners have heard me say this before, but and not many people seem to agree with me, but for me, it's about having less test cricket, but longer series. So stop playing these, like, you know, playing like lots of random two test series and concentrate on just like one or two, five match. Sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional about this. Five match series a year. Because I think five match series do have a context and a meaning and a significance of their own. Whereas two test series that are often played inside 2 weeks are very kind of
forgettable,
yeah, or can be very forgettable. That would be the way I'd go, but I don't think they're going to do that. But they're also not, as I say, going to do two divisions or conferences, which could be a better system, you know, not a kind of tiered structure, but have just divide the teams into two conferences and then have a playoff between the two, which would allow you to do it in a shorter time frame. But it's just, that's not going to happen. But this format they got at the moment is kind of neither fish nor fowl, isn't it? So it doesn't really work. So yeah, could be heading for the bin. Speaking of which, I think that's about it for the World Cricket Show this time around as well. We will be back soon because, yeah, there's obviously lots of cricket coming up this winter. We might even have something very special for you on Christmas Day if you're very lucky, if you write a very nice letter to Father Christmas. Have you written your Christmas list this year, Tony? This really made me laugh. Mutual friend of the show, Ollie, one of the Film Pod boys, said to me the other day, I was like, oh, do you want to come round or something? Do you want to come round tonight, mate? He's like, can't tonight, mate. Got to stay in and write my Christmas list. I thought he was joking, but he wasn't.
The 33-year-old man.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, we'll hopefully, we'll be dropping an episode on Christmas Day. But I hope everybody has a great Christmas, and we'll be back very soon. We'll be back after Christmas or in the new year to talk more about what's happening in cricket around the world. I don't know where I'm going with this sentence.
I've just had a text from M, who's in the other room. He's just texted, what time are you finishing, with 3 question marks.
Oh, she sounds like she's quite relaxed,
yeah,
about this
the door
thing.
Yeah,
well, you can tell her that we're nearly finished, but well, we haven't really touched on this, Tone. You know, how I was going to ask how your pandemic's going. Is that a bit glib? I don't know. It's for the benefit of listeners who may not be aware, we continue to be kind of unbelievably, like, impossibly lucky in Guernsey, because we have been, to all intents and purposes, COVID-free on the island since May, late April. Had no restrictions of any kind since June. So, like, I feel a bit guilty, like, you know, talking to friends and family in the UK. I've just been through another lockdown. And I feel a bit guilty mentioning it on here because I'm aware that, you know, virtually everybody listening to this is going to be, will have been having a far tougher time. So, you know, we are well aware of how lucky we are. At least for the time being, we continue to be kind of restriction free. Long may that continue. But there's, you know, obviously there's good news, hopefully, you know, on the horizon for everyone around the world with the vaccine rollout coming.
I mean, I think they're going to start immunizing people this week, aren't they, in Scotland?
I told you that earlier, yeah. Tone. They'll be jabbing people.
Away.
Yeah, Tuesday, the NHS rollout.
That's mad.
Start.
That is actually mad. Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see. Interesting is probably not the right word. It's hard to predict kind of how quickly that will change the picture and what it means for everyone. But I mean, I guess, you know, from a sporting perspective, what it means for sport, how quickly things will return to something like normal.
Mm. Well, yeah, we don't know, do we? But interestingly, they are selling tickets for the test matches next summer, aren't they, in the UK? So they're kind of assuming that things will be back to normal enough to...
Well, I think we should try and get over.
I'm keen.
For a day.
Well, I do think that's going to happen. I know a lot of people, and maybe we have a skewed perspective on this, having effectively been living outside the pandemic for a long time. But there are a lot of people sort of saying, like, oh, well, will people go back? You know, will it ever go back to normal? Because will people be sort of traumatized and not want to go back into big social gatherings and things? I mean, our experience here, albeit after a far shorter lockdown, was that people pretty much instantly snap back into the way things were before, and no one really thinks about the fact that we're just going in and out of crowds and into shops and things with no masks and no social distancing. But I think people are going to want to, as soon as it's safe, people are going to want to go and do those things that they haven't been able to do. I think we're going to have a roaring 20s now, because I think people will want to go out and live their lives. We'll see, you know, I might be wrong, but if the vaccine rollout goes well, I really do think there will be packed houses at test matches next summer.
Yeah, 100%. From our experience here, definitely. Mm. I don't think people, I mean, maybe some people will think differently, but not enough to make things look any different to how they were before, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably worth saying, like, you know, as I say, we're well sort of cognizant of how lucky we are here, but it's not like it's been plain sailing, you know, for us either. I mean, I haven't seen my family for a year now, and, you know, they've not seen Teddy for, you know, since he was a tiny baby, and he's now 18 months old. So, you know, it's certainly not without its challenges. But just hope for all our sakes that this vaccine rollout goes well and we can all get back to normal.
Definitely.
All right, well, we'll be back very soon. In the meantime, if you enjoy the show, get involved on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. I'm sure you'll find us at Cricket Show. I've told you. Follow us at Appis Daily.
Yeah, just get involved. I think we should revive that next winter, for sure.
Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. And if you enjoy the show, then do leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it. But that's about it.
Well, I guess just fine. I mean, if you're interested in acquiring the domain, the username,
the handle,
at Ashes Daily, you know, submit your closed seal bids.
Our DMs are open.
I wonder what email address.
Slide into our DMs with an offer.
Well, we really, you know, really put some long yards into that. Long yards. We've got zero. We're following zero accounts, and we've got 11 followers on Ashes Daily.
Who are the 11 followers? They've really been a bit shortchanged over the last 10 years. All right. Well, cheers, Dane. Have a great Christmas, everyone. Stay in school, stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Nice one.
Bye bye for now.
Cheery.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.